Yeah, I wanted to talk more about that kind of theme of true self. I always feel awkward even using that phrase because it lands so different with so many different people. But I wanted to, I think even for the next few classes, maybe, play with the question of like, what is that true self? How do you know it's there? What do we make of it? Is it just brain activity? Is it something kind of spiritual or soulful? And I think I was even earlier, I was looking up kind of like different traditions that have this kind of framing of egoic consciousness and then some kind of a self. And it's in the dozens of therapeutic traditions, of religious traditions, spiritual traditions. They have some version of this egoic tangled consciousness and some true self, some freedom from that. Yeah, so I wanted to just kind of look at some of those lenses, and really I'm very interested in your kind of collective thoughts on what that is. And just to be clear, like when I say ego, I'm in this context, I'm really more talking about egoic consciousness. So ego can mean a lot of different things. It can be a Freudian thing. It can be like an ego trip, like having a big ego, but I really more mean it here is like just this sense of individual self, that the consciousness of most of us spend our time living in, which is a solid sense of self with preferences, with needs and aversions and everything that comes with our kind of human conditioning. So yeah, I wanted to kind of play, like get to know that conditioning of the ego through the lens of just some neuroscience that I am just tickled by. I just find to be really interesting. And to me, it's like that understanding some facet of the ego is an opportunity to understand yourself a bit better, and it's an opportunity for mindfulness. It's to kind of take this disidentifying step back and see your conditioning through a particular lens. So some of this is just like fun, like to me it's fun anyway, like playful ways to just understand your own conditioning. But I'm meaning to frame it more in like, okay, this is our kind of egoic conditioning. This is what happens in our brains as we evolve. What is it that's not that? Like, what is it that's left if you strip away that conditioning or that learning? What is that consciousness or that awareness or whatever you want to call it, that true self that's remaining? So I want all of you to answer that question for me by the end of the session today, please. So I want to start with this exercise. So if you guys want to take that and pass around. So you want to hold it. So the dark part is in the top left. So you want to hold it landscape, and the darkest part is in the top left, if that makes sense. And I'm just curious if anyone sees anything, like any.
Yep.
What do you see?
Dog.
Okay, you see a dog.
Oh, I see a woman's face.
You see a woman's face. Okay.
I see a leopard.
Okay.
I'm on the leopard side.
I'm
I see a river.
you see a river. Okay, so you can turn into like a Rorschach like
Yeah.
experiment of like what's your mind creating there? Where I'm curious where you see the dog.
Right here.
Yeah,
That
right.
deer.
So what we're gonna do if you put it down.
Right.
So we're gonna give you the answer here. So if you put it down for a second and then pass around this and just look at the picture.
That's hysterical.
Well,
So
that,
this
I mean,
tree
it's
thing is
because I
obvious
love
to
dogs.
me.
Like,
Oh,
I mean,
could be.
We were close.
I
Yeah.
don't know, like,
Except that was the rearrange.
Identify right away with,
Well,
like,
yeah, I
seeing
think that
that,
was the
but
you
rearrange.
the
Yeah.
Dalmatian, I mean,
Now
I'm
I see
thinking
it.
it's probably a Dalmatian.
You're right on target. You're right on target.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can
That's why
see
I thought
it
it
now,
was a
but
leopard.
there's no way I was going to see that.
Well, right. Isn't that interesting?
But I see an eye here.
Yeah.
But this was obvious to me, that kind of ground
Yeah.
around a tree and the trunk.
Yeah, that's funny.
But that's wild.
Do you see it, Lincoln?
Oh, yeah.
You got it, yeah. So
yeah. was going to happen.
And this,
now I can't not see it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
Right, that's so, the, yeah. And now I'm looking for the line, and then this almost looks like a river and a picnic table.
Right, you can invent all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But so this was invented, I want to say, like 1950 or something. This is like a classic, like, I don't know what to call it, like thought experiment or psychological experiment. But, you know, the point is you saw these dots, right? This kind of like abstract picture. Your mind is trying to like make sense of it. And then you have this learning experience. So you get this new information and your very helpful brain is now kind of projecting that anticipation onto this. So you see the same dots as before. It's the same raw data, but there is now this new level of anticipation. The mind is helping us out. So,
and you can't go back. That's the thing.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Actually, my brain's trying to stick with the original.
I like that. That's good.
You prefer the original translation.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Get away from it.
Well, yeah. That's what I was going to ask is, can you, if you look at it, are you aware of the mind adding that filter? Can you yeah. mindfully notice your brain filling in the gaps?
Before we saw the...
No, now. Like, okay. Like now can you look at it and can you see the mind translating it for you? And this isn't a trick question. I'm curious if you are able to be mindful of the thought. Because right now, what's happening is you're experiencing this. And then there is this mental activity that is making this into a Dalmatian. Are you aware of that mental activity?
Yes.
So you can see your mind doing that. I can't see a mind doing it. It happens too fast.
Oh, interesting.
But that's not to say you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just so subtle.
I think at first when you gave it, I felt my mind
trying yeah,
and putting right. it. Like going, like it was trying to simplify things. So naturally, you're trying to associate like all the, at least for me, like the dark images first as to what it is, and then moving outwards. But I think that's like now it's happening fast where I can't see
it's
it.
Just
but
happened.
Like
yeah.
prior to that, I felt my mind looking at
right.
it.
Right, you could
going,
see.
Oh,
right, you could see a part of you trying. To,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
I still see what I saw early on when one of you said dog and one of you said something, but I still see.
That's like a cat or
no,
leopard
face.
I
see face. An eye.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. I saw that too
and,
now.
And I thought, what is that?
But it's not quite as
no, but it is. Exactly. It is there. Like
it is there. The Cheshire cat.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's you could see like. An image of eyes there, almost like a weird Halloween mask here in the
yeah,
bottom.
Yeah.
So like wherever there's double things, you're almost putting a face to it.
So
it's weird.
What is the science behind this again?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, which is that the neuroscience term for 80% of our brain's activity is called simulation. Which is basically our mind is this big model, like it's constantly finding ways to understand ourselves
right,
and the
right,
world that we live
right,
in. Like to me, the active words are anticipation,
yeah.
Projection,
yeah.
expectation, prediction. It's like it's constantly, even in real time,
yeah.
like it's constantly
yeah.
anticipating what it expects and then uses real world data to kind of inform that. And that process is called simulation. It's like a matrix, right? It's a model inside our head that's constantly doing that.
Machine learning.
Yeah, it's a form of machine learning. It's the machine learning.
I would add the word interpretation because it's amazing how something happens and it turns you up, and it's partly because you're interpreting an experience that may be accurate, but it may not be accurate.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's just one of the primary points I wanted to make today, which is that. Our mind is mostly like in its own story, and we think like the beginner interpretation is that we are taking this raw data from the world, and then we kind of sort through it and we, you know, make sense of that. But in terms of how we experience the world, it's actually the reverse. Is our mind is kind of creating our reality all the time, and then in fact, I have a direct quote from a neuroscientist here somewhere. your brain is constantly predicting what sensory inputs to expect. Then it uses the incoming input to either confirm its prediction or change it. But this is where, if you're caught in your past pain, your partner said something to you that triggers you, and you're back in that place of abandonment or rage or whatever your stuff is, your brain is so loud in presenting that anticipated story based on the past learning that getting the new data of your partner being empathic or not responding the way that you're expecting them to is almost irrelevant because you're kind of lost in that experience.
It also seems like the mind, it doesn't like ambiguity or miss it, not having the complete picture.
Right.
So it's going to fill in the picture.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Both you folks talked about running, and I'm sure this has happened to you. You look up ahead and you say, is that a fox on the stone? You know, and you're like, I'm sure that's a fox on the stone. And like, what the hell? Is it a log?
Right.
You
know? Right.
I saw a horse today, but I think it was a horse. I don't know.
So you're not sure, right?
I don't know. I never caught up to it.
Do you think it is part of it because we want certainty? We want to know where we stand.
We'll say more.
It must have evolutionary roots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would expect it to have evolutionary roots, right?
To think, and also how quickly it happens.
Yeah.
Like in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, on the theme of certainty, I think because this is so much of our conditioning and because we rely on this model to survive in the world,
that's right.
Like if something's off, we wander into a bear cave, we get eaten, right? Like if we're not predicting or anticipating correctly, it's got catastrophic consequences. So we spend a lot of energy kind of making sure things fit together, that our world is kind of tidy, which to me, there's so many interesting directions to go in here, but you start to look at people who have worldviews that are not entirely rational, like let's say flat earthers, like to pick on them a little bit. Like if you have this view, you've been in whatever internet circles and you've really reinforced this as part of your personality, and like this is the big conspiracy, and that as soon as you get new data that contradicts that expectation, this whole certain worldview that you've built, well, you might think on a rational level, you start to see some pictures from space, you study some of the science, and like you change your view. What's the big deal? But if your whole worldview is wrapped around that certainty, that to fracture that belief is to basically fracture the whole model itself, which is catastrophic, which is like, well, if I can't rely on that thing that I thought I was certain about, what does that mean for everything else that's going on? It just creates this tremendous existential angst.
Which is exactly where we are at.
Politically.
On a global scale.
That's true.
It's not like it's just happening here. I mean, it's extremely unnerving because, we'll use the flat earthers because that's just a good, safer point.
Yeah, right.
So some of them, you could get out the globes, you could get out the planets, you could get out pictures, and they'd still be saying, it's all a scam,
right.
It's not really that way. And haven't you seen the pictures of the where it ends in Antarctica on the wall?
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah.
I've seen it, but it's not real.
Yeah. Right.
You should go there.
Yeah.
Like, okay, fine.
Right.
But that and would destroy their maybe concept of themselves, the world, who they believe in, and that's scary, so they have to hold on to it. I mean, as we can see, people are willing to, who knows, die for it, or...
Or sacrifice lots of other people.
Oh, exactly.
Nick, can I just ask, is there any value in, and I'll tell you all why in a minute, in making use of things like this? Is this like good exercise for your brain? And I'll tell you, so my basement floor, because I renovated my house and I wanted a floor that I'd always wanted, so it's a polished concrete. and it's filled with little pebbles. Mm. Okay, so I use the bathroom down there, and I am always looking at the floor, and I'm seeing different objects. Mm. And there are times when I can come back and say, now where was that again? Oh, there it is. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, they're all little polished pebbles that are set into, you know, that's the aggregate that's below all concrete, but it's been polished, so it's shiny and it's pretty. And is there anything useful besides the fact that I enjoy doing it?
Well, do you mean like, well, say more, like, yeah, in terms of...
Yeah, because it's just random shapes.
Or to be faced with the contradiction that your brain was actually wrong. I mean, it's maybe a little bit different, but that was what was happening for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It was just, it actually forced me to recognize that what I thought was not actually the case.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, and that flexibility, I guess.
Okay.
Makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I've seen like videos and pictures where, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 things
right.
But certainly the one that comes to mind is the one with, you know, we have these 6 colored balls and we have 5 people and we're going to pass the balls around and I want you to see how many times the red ball gets transferred. And they say, well, 15. He says, yeah, but did you see the guy in the gorilla suit?
Oh, right.
That didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then you watch it again and say, like, How could I possibly miss it? So it's the same thing. The mind can, in that case, the mind is so focused that it can put dismiss.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And the art experiment that you said, I thought was
wild.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a very real experiment.
And there are several versions of that.
Really?
Well, one is to do with phantom limb pain.
Mm-hmm. And they're using it to treat phantom pain.
Yeah, actually. Mm-hmm. They set it up so you're seeing it, your real arm. You don't have your left arm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Right.
But one of the... It's not phantom pain that really bothers people that have lost a limb. A lot of times it's the sensation of itching. And a scratch that they can't itch, but it's out there, outside their body.
Wow.
So they put the mirror, and then they start scratching that hand. They go, oh my God, I've been waiting like 5 years to scratch that itch.
Right.
But then you think about it, well, that means that somehow they're projecting their sensation.
Yeah.
That's right.
There.
Yeah.
That's right.
So they took it a step further, or, well, just related, and I've done this just sort of mind games, where you put both hands out there and you stroke both the feather and tap it and the same thing. Then you put one hand under the table, all right? Then you do the same thing to the top of the table and they can feel it.
Oh, that's a good one.
So then it's an inanimate, you know, you're not seeing your arm. It's an inanimate object that transfers the sensation to your
Just to all the way the brain fills in the space.
That's right. Amazing.
The same thing, yeah.
Anticipation. Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah, like I take a lot of comfort in this kind of exploration because it's just like, you know, anytime I'm in a place of like self-pity or, you know, there's something difficult going on in my life, like my instinct is to say it is my circumstances that are causing that. You know, it's like something out there that's doing it, but like, as a reminder for like how much our mind is working to like create this story of what it anticipates, that like that reality is so compelling that it's always this self-created thing. Like even if circumstances are actually challenging on some level, that pretty much 10 out of 10 times, you know, I'm still waiting to kind of disprove this to myself, but like every time it's my own mind that is creating my suffering. It's that anticipation. And like these kinds of exercises are a reminder of just how deep that is, you know, that story is so subtle and it's hard to kind of see the bottom of that storytelling, that it's a reminder that there's always a possibility for relief, that even if our circumstances are difficult, there's some anticipation thing going on that is contributing to the suffering.
Can it work in the inverse? Like, can we use that power for good in a way? Like, just like, you know, you can relieve the itch. Like, can we take the power of anticipation and fill in, I don't know, like, positive?
Well, what I'm thinking is, again, with maybe not the flat earther, but somebody, so I have a point of view and I believe in it, and I look at the other person, I say, how can you not understand that and believe that? How is that possible? But if you do flip it from their perspective, they're saying the same about you, saying, well, what is wrong with you? Don't you read the news?
That's or just start on baseball or something. Or just what? That's my analysis.
If it's a family gathering, you change the topic, right?
Well, that's very interesting, because it's interesting how so many times not knowing what to say, especially in the Northeast, you know, like, well, what about this weather we're having here? You know, it's like a default mechanism that's neutral.
Yeah. You know. It's protection.
Yeah, I don't think that's rain. Yeah, I think that's rain.
I really like the question, because it's like, well, what if our brain is anticipating something negative, that could we just reprogram it to anticipate something positive, and what would that be like? I think our mind is so, like, you guys can jump in here with other ideas, but like my sense is that the mind is so biased towards painful experiences that if there is some point of view that's locked in, it's usually informed by something painful in the past. And so it's not just like the mind isn't trying to be accurate necessarily, it's trying to be protective. It's mostly trying to anticipate something that could, like, this is a very benign exercise, but in terms of by volume, our mind is mostly looking for the things that are going to hurt in some way. So to unpredict that is, one, very hard. That's kind of the essence of trauma therapy. And to arbitrarily replace it with something positive, like, our mind's going to call bullshit on that, because it's like, oh, I don't really care if something positive is going to happen. I want to protect us from what could happen that's negative.
Yeah.
So to me, the essence of the path to relief is more a movement towards true self, is less just reprogramming us to anticipate positive, wonderful things, and more, how do we recognize that whole kind of lump of conditioning and align ourselves with a way of being that's not anticipating as much at all, that's more present moment, that's more disidentified from that whole story. So, like, I think the essence that I wanted to kind of throw out there is, like, we're playing with different ways of learning, right? Of, like if we're using that house metaphor, it's like, this is like one brick we just put on the house, right? It's like one little filter, one more piece of conditioning that we just added to your brain. So who are you outside of that conditioning? Who's the real you?
Like, is that what you mean by true self?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm curious if you have any kind of, you can fumble your way through a response, but any sense of, like, what who is the real you underneath all of that conditioning? There is an awareness, right? You can notice this thinking story.
But it depends for me, Nick, whether I'm thinking about my best self or I'm thinking about the rest of myself as well, because, you know, nobody's
Your
best self all the time.
So who's your best self? Like,
my best self has a sense of humor and likes to be silly.
Okay.
The things that I love, my passion about the environment and animal welfare are two big ones. Sharing that with others who feel the same way. Being in nature, changing my life from city to here.
Okay.
With intention.
So let me ask you a question. If, let's say, you are in your best self, you are manifesting those qualities, is there an awareness of yourself in that moment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually.
So there,
because
you are.
It's not there all the time. So
sure.
It's...
But there is this consciousness that follows you around everywhere, whether you're a total jerk, whether you are living a great, happy life and doing wonderful things, there is this, like, this consciousness. Isn't this amazing that there's this, like, awareness that is just here, that you can't turn off? You go to sleep, but even then, it's like, it's kind of everywhere. So that's what we're kind of orienting towards, is if that's your good self, what or who is the awareness that is aware of that? Is there still, like, that self you're describing kind of comes and goes, right? Like sometimes you're grouchy and sometimes you're friendly, and like, but yet there is an awareness that's kind of consistent there. What is that?
I feel like it's just a feeling of being and feeling of it. It's a feeling. It's a thought. It's whatever is happening right now in that moment. But to describe it, there's nothing to describe.
Well,
like there's nothing. I'm not going to say I was born here, did that. That's not me. Mm-hmm. That was something that happened to me. Or now I sound poetic or something like philosophical. I'm just trying to say I was born there, but like that was happened. But at that moment, that was my being. But now this is my being in the present moment. Like that, yeah, not thinking time. Time is kind of like, time is where you get tripped up in this question too. Because you're timeless in a sense.
So you is that about not getting caught in the past and talking about the here and now?
Yeah, or describe me like in terms of, my name is Dwight. I am the I like this. Yeah, I like dog. Yeah. I don't like this. You know, it's like that stuff is not me necessarily. I mean, it's likes and dislikes are part of you, but then it's like so fleeting. Like, why would I? Yeah, it's just being. It's just seeing. It's like an awareness of something that goes deeper that I can't describe. And yeah. It's weird. It's weird. It's, yeah.
I have this feeling of it being an essence, like mm-hmm. and something at my right. core, right? And like it feels very like natural, and it feels present when there's less like weight of the world feelings. But I just sometimes. It's an essence. And I agree. It's sort of timeless. I think, at least, I think I experience it as it being timeless, although it is more or less present at different times.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. It's like I just thought this like a metaphor is like you see a jet and like you're that jet, say, going across, but like that. Puffs of clouds and smoke in the back are like what you were. Like, and it's kind of like just kind of like saying, yeah, that I was born there. And, you know, it's like a time you can kind of reference it, but then just the being or the sense of self is just in the present. Like, in order to describe myself, I would just have to say how I presently feel. And that's who I am or whatever. But it's so fleeting because those prejudices or biases that I have now are always changing. So it's like, you know, just the only thing consistent is chocolate ice cream.
across the board.
That is my essence.
Everybody?
Chocolate.
Yes.
Chocolate, dark chocolate. Chocolate. That's my essence. Maybe that's it. I can, one word, chocolate, it describes me.
I can go with that.
Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah, I like the word essence is like
I do too.
That. I mean, that's what we're playing with is like what's real? Who are we really? You know, aside from all of the change, our personality, like who is underneath all of that? And one of the classic metaphors. So this is a Dzogchen metaphor. So Dzogchen is a Tibetan tradition that was established around the. It's like 9th century or so. But the way they talk about your essence is kind of like a pure awareness in that tradition. And they present it, and I say they, as in like this is now used in a lot of different traditions. I think Pema Chodron used this metaphor at some point recently. But that our true self or our consciousness is like the sky, that the sky itself doesn't have any particular quality to it. It's empty space. It's the place that there is experience, there's phenomena, there's form. And the weather is our ego, is our conditioning. It's the stuff that passes through there. And there might be calmer weather, there might be thunderstorms or whatever, but we are not that weather. You know, the weather is constantly changing. It's closer to the truth to say that we are the sky. And that our true self is the awareness that bears witness to all of the phenomena that is perpetually unfolding within us. And it's such a fascinating kind of paradigm, you know, to talk about this thing. And this is the, if you're familiar with the phrase, I know I use it in the materials, but the hard problem of consciousness is the scientific term for, like, how do you study and measure something that is literally immeasurable and yet self-evident? Because we all know consciousness exists. We are ourselves proof of that. But how do you study it? It doesn't have any quality. As soon as you attribute a quality of warmth or whatever, calm, you still have to go back to the question of, well, who or what is aware of that quality of warmth and calm or tumult or whatever it is you're bearing witness to.
So I think we're very complex creatures. I don't need to say more than that. I think I don't know that there's any one explanation that can take it all apart and make and still somehow make sense to all of us. We're all variations on lots of themes. So yeah.
Where does beginner's mind, how does that factor into? Is that something you believe in?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, beginner's mind is the, are you familiar with that? Everyone familiar with beginner's mind? No, it's a Zen phrase. It's sometimes used in league with don't know mind. And beginner's mind is kind of a spirit of showing up to the moment as though it's fresh, as though you're a beginner. So it's kind of like this is, it's like a, you know, a toddler who's turning over a rock. It's like total beginner's mind of, like, you're just seeing it fresh.
Trying not to make any assumptions.
Right. And that, I think, is, you're hitting the nail on the head of, like, that practice. And I wanted to actually go into Zen in a few weeks specifically. They have some really lovely kind of tools relating to some of these questions. But I think it's getting at this of, like beginner's mind is a way to kind of step outside of that conditioned knowing of, like, I'm anticipating what's going to happen and seeing it fresh, you know, really. So it's almost.
Is it also about trying to withhold judgment?
Well, certainly the judgment being, I think, our conditioned response to something.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's yet another tool, and there's many, many out there. Like, how do you work with that conditioned response and kind of slide out of it, you know, find a way to relate to the moment in a new way. So I'm being probably pretty transparent with my own bias. Like, in my own view is that this is really more of, like, this true self is something more spiritual, you know, is more soulful. I'm totally open-minded, you know, I'm not, like, wedded to some view, but I do want to make room for any beliefs you all might have, or those who are listening to this, like, that this is just activity in the brain, you know, and I guess I want to play with that of, like, is there no true self? Like, are we just ego all the way down? Is there just ego and slightly less ego? Is true self, you're shaking your head, Maria.
I don't think so. I think the goal of mindfulness is to come into communion with your true self and
to
realize our Buddha nature.
Right. Right. Yeah, I very much agree. And it's a hard thing to prove. You know, it's a hard thing to kind of assert, especially for people who are, you know, have a very scientific view. They only want to, you know, believe in something that's, like, proven, and you can't really prove consciousness. You can't prove a lot of this stuff.
You know, trying to contemplate unconsciousness. I mean, it was fleeting, but then I realized that it really is the, there are, you know, three components of our being: body, mind, spirit. Mm-hmm. If we call spirit consciousness, mm-hmm. and mind is the mind, right. And the body is all the sensory, all the somatic experiences. But that triad has a relationship, and that's sort of our existence. And it's hard to give one more weight than the other because they're, you know, constantly bobbing.
Yeah.
Well, right. One to the next.
Yeah. That's right. And but the body has way more concrete science to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
much easier to measure.
Has a little bit more.
Consciousness even less.
Exactly. Right. That's how it occurs to me. But I think you're right, and even just putting it in those terms is helpful for me, remembering that that's how we're all constructed, body, mind, and...
I was going to add, like, I think consciousness is just, like, awareness, just pure awareness. Like, you're aware what's happening now or how you feel and aware of the past, mm-hmm. but it's just awareness. But then when you pass or whatever, there's not that same exact awareness, like meaning no one else has that awareness except you. That consciousness is very specific to yourself.
Yeah.
So it's not like your consciousness is different than my consciousness. And I mean, we're saying consciousness as a collective denominator here, just to think of it that way, but it's really just like awareness.
Yeah, you're...
To me, I mean, I'm just, this is all... This is B.S. Dwight.
As it is for me, too.
I'm a different person.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, like, you know, I'm talking deep now, but I'm just saying I don't, like, I'm thinking and riffing on that. Like, just, I think it's more awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm resisting the impulse to go deeper because I feel like you're hitting on some good questions. So I wanted to maybe do a short guide. We don't have a lot of time, but I want to do a short guided meditation on just kind of the internal family system's take on this. And as I know, at least a few of you know, that like the, you know, in IFS, they call the true self, like, or self energy, they describe it with these qualities, these 8 C's, and I wrote them down because I always forget them. So it's calm, curious, clear, compassionate, confident, courageous, creative, and connected. And, you know, that's the IFS way into that true self of, like, it, you can kind of like feel out in this state of mind I'm in this consciousness, is it, you know, does it have that 8 C's quality to it? And I'd throw in there, like, one of my little metrics is kind of noticing if there's an agenda or there's a kind of a controlling energy that, like, when I feel more aligned with that essence or that true self, I notice I do not have, like, I don't really have an agenda. You know, I'm not trying to make something happen, which is very unusual for me. I'm very controlling. I'm almost always trying to make something happen. So I wanted to just play with a meditation of just kind of the IFS style of making this transition from our ego, noticing the parts and kind of taking that backward step into self. So do you guys need to stand up or stretch before we do a short 10 minute thing? Thank you.
Do you want the dog up or
down?
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just going to wash my cup.
Go for it.
Like, I was finding that I didn't want reality to intrude and limit what I could see in that picture.
There's you have a part there that's wanting the pure seeing. Well, you're welcome
like
to.
That, like that, it's looking good there.
You can hear it calling your name.
Yeah. Okay. Feel free to get comfortable, whatever comfortable looks like. Lying down is totally welcome. Maybe start just by checking in with your breath. Using it as an anchor, settling point. Letting the discussion fade and tuning to that simple awareness. I'm doing a light review of whatever is present for you right now. Sensations. Emotions, your mental climate, just acknowledging whatever is present for you right now. See if you can begin to allow some of these qualities of self to emerge. Just that calm place. That presence. Maybe for you it's a quality of spaciousness or warmth. Not overthinking it or trying too hard. Just softening into that simple awareness. And if you're having trouble connecting with that space, seeing if you can notice whatever seems to be blocking or interfering with it. a part of you efforting or self-doubt. Am I doing this right? Or maybe it's stress. Maybe you're feeling tension, anxiety. And just bringing some light attention to any of these parts that might be showing up. And notice that there is a conscious presence that is able to recognize these parts. Giving these parts permission to show up as they are. Letting go of any agenda to try and change yourself. Change your experience. And instead expand your awareness to include whatever parts are showing up. Giving your body and mind total permission to show up exactly as they are. Bring some attention to that space around that's able to contain these feelings and parts, body sensations. And notice if there's any qualities in that space. A sense of calm, of curiosity. Caring. Maybe a sense of things being okay as they are. Seeing if you can rest into those qualities. Trusting that they're a natural ground. is resting in that space for a few more moments. Appreciating what it's like when we're not tangled up in our experience quite as much. Shifting from anticipating into being. As we approach the end, just letting your attention check in with your body. Feeling your contact with the earth. Chair. The breath.